What is going on, podcast listeners? New here for another episode. I got an exciting guest for you guys, Paul Tran, one of the OGs in the franchise space. What's going on, Paul?
OG's too big of a claim, but I'll do my best to bring it. I'm well, man. How are you, dude?
I'm doing well, man. We're actually not too far from each other right now. Paul is down in the Orange County area. Paul, do you mind if I hype you up, man? You seem like a humble guy. If I want to ask you your background, I feel like it's going to be tamed down, but can I hype you up for a second?
Yes, and then I'll do my best to give context and take away the thunder. Go ahead.
There we go. All right, cool. So Paul is an OG in the franchise space, been in the game for I think over 15 years. He's the largest franchisee of Halal Guys. If you guys know what Halal Guys is, he owns 9 stores, I believe, over $15 million in annual revenue from those. Now he's doing a bunch of cool stuff in the franchise space. He's involved in another franchise called Roll 'Em Up Taquitos. Sold over 1,000 franchises, just one of the OGs in the game, like I said. So Paul, I'm pumped to have you on and dropping some wisdom for everyone looking into franchising.
Oh, well, thank you. That wasn't too much hype. That was just cool. About right.
All right.
I won't dispute.
Yeah. Paul, I want to kind of start off at the beginning about how you got into the game. So I believe your first business was Golden Frog or Teeny Bar. Is that right?
No, it was a independent seafood restaurant called The Cajun Corner.
Okay, I'm mixing up the names. The Cajun Corner. And how old were you when you started that?
I believe I was 24.
So pretty young, man.
I was, At that time, I just had a bunch of false sense of money, which is through my student loans. I also had just a false sense of arrogance and overconfidence, and that served me well to get started. I definitely had to recalibrate as I got older and more mature and realized actually this is not how things work and how things scale. But started when I was 24, my last semester of college. And just had this crazy idea to start a restaurant because how hard can it be? The rest is history.
So how'd you get started in the restaurant space? Like, for example, your parents, were they in the business world?
No, they were just regular working class folks. They just did a lot of like lower level entry jobs. They immigrated from Vietnam. They have a crazy story where they just hopped on a boat and dropped everything they knew as they knew it and came here at a chance to start a life or have a better life. So it's another story for another time. But no, they just had regular jobs. My dad was a janitor at a Catholic temple, and my mom was just like an assembly worker. The idea started in high school where, you know, one of those guys who are just trying to sell those MLM, multi-level marketing things, even though that was like kind of a scam, the good thing that did come out of it was one of the guys who was trying to recruit me gave me this book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that book, that book pretty much taught me the principle of like, you don't have to trade your hours for dollars. And the typical pathway of, you know, going to college, getting into debt, working for 40 years out of your life and hope for a retirement is kind of like a false sense of security. And, you know, if that was the true path to success and happiness, why is everyone miserable and all sorts of other things? But that pretty much detached me from trying to, trade my dollars for time, which, I mean, I know you're a big proponent of that, too. Hence the lifestyle and the company you built, too. But that's how it all started.
Very cool. So back then when you're 24, you decided you want to get into business and make money for yourself.
Yes.
Why a restaurant? There's so many different other business models that exist. Was it just the most logical for you? You were like, I like food. Let me start a restaurant. Or walk me through the thought process.
Because restaurants are so easy. I love food. So that's definitely a jump starter. But there was a restaurant that was here in Orange County. Since you're from SoCal too, maybe you're familiar with the Boiling Crab. Mm-hmm. It was like crawfish. At the time in 2005, they were the only game in town. And they were always met with like 2 to 4 hour long waits at their restaurants. Doesn't matter any day, any time of day. It was just insane. So in my head, I love the food so much. I was a little bit irritated by waiting for 2 to 4 hours. And I just thought to myself, man, I should just open my own restaurant. And I don't have to capture all the customers. I just need to serve people unwilling to wait 2 to 4 hours, just like me. And again, you know, in retrospect, that's the whole supply demand gap and filling a market need and all that, you know, economic terms. I didn't know any of that stuff. I just wanted to scratch my own itch.
Yeah.
So I just brought a couple of buddies with me to dinner and just said, hey, what do you think about starting a restaurant? And one of my good friends who became my partner, who wasn't a chef by trade, but he's got this amazing palate that can like deconstruct what was in a certain food. So we took a bunch of bags of crawfish home. We did like probably over 100 trials. That's probably where I got gout and a bunch of other health problems. Yeah. Again, therapy session for another episode. But we eventually got down to a recipe that we felt proud of. And we just decided to put together some of our student loan money. And we found a spot that was an existing restaurant. So we were able to convert and inherit a bunch of stuff without having to pay for it. We opened up and, cool story. Boiling Crab, there at the time, Boiling Crab always closed for 2 months out of the year. Mm-hmm. I thought they closed because it was, they just wanted to go on vacation. But I found out when I opened that they closed because there's no crawfish for 2 months out of the year. Yeah. I didn't know that. That's just goes to show like how ignorance pretty much led all of my decision-making. That was a stupid idea to start off with. But later on, during that 2 month period, just like Chick-fil-A, where people crave, Chick-fil-A on Sundays and when they can't have it, because people were craving crawfish during that 2 month period, when we decided to open in October, when there was still no crawfish and we decided to serve shrimp and crab and other things instead of getting the customers that were unwilling to wait 2 to 4 hours, we got all of the customers.
And so that
worked out like beautifully in retrospect. It wasn't a credit to my intelligence. It was just like, it worked out perfectly. So ignorance is my superpower.
I always say that with like entrepreneurship is sometimes if you don't know what you're getting into, it's actually way better because you might get scared off. If you're like, oh, like for example, someone told you, hey, you're not gonna make money for 2 months. You might be like, oh, well, let me go and try something else. And there's always an excuse to not doing anything. But once you actually get into it, you can be innovative, kind of like you did. Just because you have a problem, and anytime there's a problem, there's always a solution. You just got to figure it out.
Well, thank you for making me feel better about that. But at the time, it felt like, oh, shit, what am I doing? What is wrong with me? I'm so stupid. But at that time, we've already, at the time, my ego and my pride refused to back down. So it actually, all the things I tell people about, like sunk costs and you need to have experience and all these things, like they actually truly reverse helped me early on. It shifts reverse now as I get older and I get paid to give more solid advice.
Yeah.
But early on that was the propellant. So yeah.
Got it. How do you transition from that to running a bunch of halal guys? What was the mental process like for you?
Yeah. No mental process.
Okay. Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah. Well, by the second year of our restaurant, we started getting franchise requests. Very cool. But I had no idea how to franchise. So, what we do when we're ignorant, but we're curious is we just researched and we found out how to franchise. I stumbled upon a company based in DC, but also had an office in Newport Beach called FranceSmart. And they were famous for growing brands like Five Guys Burgers early on when they only had like 5 stores. And at the time I was trying to pitch them on helping me franchise, but it turned out that number one, my concept wasn't ready. And number two, I must have made a positive impression on them. And it was perfect timing because they said, hey, by the way, we're growing very rapidly and we need some more help. Would you like to help us? And at that time, I wanted to learn how to franchise. So they pretty much gave me a job. And so I ran my restaurant and I helped FranceSmart with their franchise sales and just franchise strategy in general. So I ended up working for them for the next 10 years.
No way. So alongside you running your restaurant, you also worked with them.
Yeah. By the third year, we got an offer to get acquired. So I sold my company I eventually just went full on with FranceSmart.
And what were you doing for them?
A lot of it, my main compensation was tied to just selling franchises.
Okay.
And also there's a little bit of strategy, but that was more on, my CEO who was more responsible for the strategy side. But I got to learn a lot alongside him on all the meetings and all the, stuff like that. But my main job was helping sell franchises.
And that was for a variety of different brands or was it specifically?
Yeah. So there's a portfolio of about 3 to 4 brands that I helped sell at any given time. Yeah.
I'm curious, what have you, I mean, there's probably so many learnings from that, but when you just see so many people go through the process, you start to notice patterns.
Sure.
The people who might be right for franchising, not a fit, the brands which are good or not. I'm curious if you have any patterns that you've noticed, which you often allude to from seeing so many people through the process.
Yeah. Are you talking about patterns that are good franchisees and bad franchisees?
Yeah.
Yeah, it starts looking very similar. I'd say the best franchisees actually don't have the most experience. What I've learned is that franchisees who come to the table with 20, 30, you know, brands or units, a lot of times, there's a good amount of them that are great franchisees, and that's credit to how they've been able to scale. So I won't you know, discredit that. But there are also a lot of franchisees who, for example, most of the brands I sold for were like fast casual. They served higher class, middle class customers. They cared about the food they ate. They cared more about education and delight and stuff like Chick-fil-A or Panera Bread, for example.
Okay.
And I met a couple folks who came from the fast food industry that they knew how to run a tight ship and cut costs, and they knew how to help train workers on how to take combo one, combo two, combo three, but not actually how to delight customers or educate them. So sometimes they come with baggage. Sometimes they come with massive egos, and sometimes they come wanting to fix the brand, which is insane. I mean, again, the brand can always evolve and grow, but if you come into the discussions with a massive ego and thinking you're going to change the brand, that's already a really bad start. Also, bad franchisees tend to be completely entrepreneurial, meaning they like to create things. you sound like you've been through that.
We're starting to get to the point of, like, you know, we have run roughly 20 franchisees now, and I could see the people who've come through the process. And I think right now every franchisee is awesome. Like, I love all of them. But people who are going through the process right now, I could see, like, oh, okay, I know now you would not be a good fit. Right, because of what I know about who is a good fit. So it's funny, but very along the lines of what you're saying here.
Oh, man. I'm going to be doing a Twitter post soon about all the things I've heard about when we have to decline franchisees. And one of them was the funniest one, where they're just like, oh, I'm a $20 million tech entrepreneur, and I'm going to show you how to change your fast food business. And another one was, what do you mean I'm not approved? I own a fucking jet. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's already proof that, like, your ego has taken over the discussion, and there's no way you're going to win. So
is that actually, when you were going through it, was that one of the main reasons why people would either get declined or you would figure out they're not a good fit, is a lot of them were previous entrepreneurs or previously in kind of high ego type of careers? Was that the number one characteristic?
Yeah. And it's not necessarily like I already like put a label on them. It's more like, hey, you already own 20 stores of this brand. I mean, you're working with a brand, because most of my brands are brand new. They're emerging. They only have one to four units. So I'm just like, hey, like, why would you not continue building more stores of the brands you have? That makes more sense than building some from scratch. And a lot of these questions are more like trying to talk them out of it. And I want to know whether they are just looking at bright, shiny object syndrome, or there's like a mission to why you want this brand specifically. Sometimes I hear like, oh, my territories are sold out, I'm looking for more opportunities for my staff. That's good.
Yeah.
Or if someone is just like, I ate this healthy food and it helped me, you know, recover from cancer. I'm like, that's a pretty good, like, mission-driven decision, right? Good signs that are up for good franchisees. I actually like a lot of the corporate guys. Corporate guys are used to cutting through bureaucratic crap, and they're also used to, like, systems and procedures. They get incentivized more on executing said policies. So I'm not trying to just go after brainless workhorses, but they tend to know that action on existing policies and systems and procedures is more what they are used to. So they tend to be good franchisees, but most importantly, I think at the end of the day, like, no ego, and you are in this for a mission. And number three, you're just really coachable too. Like, if you can be coached, that's everything's possible. So
Paul, who would you say, if someone's looking to get into the business, no matter what, they want to get into the business, who should look into franchising and who should not look into franchising?
Yeah. gosh, like personas, you'd say?
Personas, yeah. Or like what they care about.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, I think people who are all about a mission mm-hmm. is more interested in the mission than the way it's than the way it's done. And they're willing to be convinced, or they're willing to follow a system that that helps them meet the mission. And they're more mm-hmm. interested in the mission than the, you know, the actual step by step. And that can be taught and coached. Those tend to be great franchisees. A lot of sports athletes tend to be really good too. Unless you're like a crazy big star where you don't have to give the ball to anyone. That's a different type of franchisee. Whereas most franchisees that come from the sports arena actually are used to working with teams. They also are used to coaches. There's a lot of like existing conditioning that they can easily transfer over to franchising.
Yeah.
And people who work in team environments in general tend to be really good too. But they also have leadership too. There's gotta be questions or there's gotta be some evidence of leadership, because sometimes it's the person who works on a team and they're usually the one slacking or not contributing. So, it requires so much context, right? Much deeper dive, but those tend to be definitely pretty good franchisees. And the bad franchisees just are just hardcore entrepreneurs who made some bets and worked out, or they're used to being in a leadership and creative type environment. Those give me pause, and that requires a deeper dive too.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because you would assume from the outside, if you're not in the franchise world, that you want someone who's highly entrepreneurial, who's had a bunch of businesses. But even for my end, that's not what we want at all. I think there's a different type, which I'm learning now, which is a portfolio investor, someone who wants to buy 20 territories and develop them. I think that's great for some brands. For like our brand, for example, that's not. I want owner operators. And for us, that doesn't mean you're out in the field, because we don't do the cleanings, but that means you're actually going to be involved in the brand. But I think there's a lot of brands, especially a lot of these really fast growing ones. Like some of them are like, wow, how'd you sell 100 territories in 1 year? But like some of these guys are just like on a different level, right? And I think those guys cater to the portfolio investor. And that's just not what we do. So I think a lot of it has to do with the brand of who they're looking for and who the business model is suitable for. Yeah. And I think some models are just not suitable for a plug and play, where you just buy and let someone else develop it. Most models are not like that. I think from my opinion, from what I've seen, people like selling that dream, where the reality is most businesses are not a buy it, put a manager in and let it run by itself model. It's just not, unless you're buying like a McDonald's, which has been around forever. That's typically what I've seen.
100%. I mean, I think I always actually tell people that, I mean, I don't have to tell the big guys that, but usually I just say, I want you to assume that you're probably going to take a longer time to make your money back, and you're probably going to be spending a little bit more money than you need. Their best franchisees, I mean, you can eventually get to 20 territories, but before that, you need to work in there, and you need to know what good looks like, and people need to know you're the face of the company, and like you need to be the one before you even know what to hire for. So,
right.
Yeah. And that's another, we can talk on and about that one, but I 100%
agree. Yeah. So Paul, you were working, you've sold over 1,000 franchises. From there, where did your career go? How did you transition from that to what you're doing now?
Yeah. So I've always been, itching to go back in, because after I've learned how to run a restaurant properly with my work through FranSmart, I'm just like, I was looking for an opportunity to jump back in and use what I learned, actually practice what I preach and what I tell other franchisees and brands. And so was just always on the lookout. At the same time, I was also amassing my connections and amassing my capital. And it was it wasn't until the Halal guys where my boss was able to convince them and got them comfortable with franchising. We actually spent 2 years getting them comfortable with it, because the original owners were really worried about loss of control or loss of quality and all these stigmas that you think franchising comes with, that we were able to either refute or, make them feel more at ease. But the Halal guys, during my travels, I always loved the Halal guys every time I go to New York. So I kind of had like a personal love for the brand. So when I knew that they were becoming a client, I was over the moon. And I helped them sell about 200 stores, but at the same time, I also wanted to have my own territory too. So I asked my boss and I asked the owners, like, hey, I still want to help you grow the brand, but I also want to become a franchisee too. I thought that was also a really good sign of credibility and putting my mouth where my money where my mouth is. So I decided to fly out with a couple of partners and built a team and convinced them, and they were comfortable with it, and the rest is history. I mean, we built three stores by 2017, and by that time I was so busy with my stores that I decided to actually leave FranSmart entirely. So it kind of overlapped for a little bit, and then and then by store three, I just wanted to focus on my Halal Guys store. So yeah,
very cool. And how about now, man? So did you grow that from 3 to 9 stores? Or do you own 3 territories with still in development?
So we own all of Orange County and Los Angeles County.
Wow.
And we built it actually up to 11 stores. However, we made some mistakes, and also COVID was also damaging to our business. Yep. And we actually lost 2 stores during COVID. Lost one on West Hollywood, and that was on Santa Monica Boulevard. Yeah, that was a busy store. We did about 2 million plus.
Wow.
But you know, we required daytime traffic, and we required all the partiers on the weekend.
Yeah.
And so when COVID hit and the lockdown mandates happened, like that traffic that we were overly dependent on just died. We also lost a store in downtown LA. And as you know, living in LA, like LA became a really scary place. And so we lost all of our worker revenue as well because of stay at home mandates. But there's also some other issues with that store. I don't want to blame COVID, but those were definitely straws that broke the camel's back. But we lost 2 stores. However, our suburban stores, the rest of the 9 stores, just killed it during COVID because of third-party delivery and not having to have a dining room staff. So got to take the wins with the losses. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
Paul, I think a lot of people listening are potentially considering what kind of business to start. Maybe they started a business. Maybe some of them are getting into it. Now, you're pretty deep into the restaurant space. So if you look at QSRs, you look at service-based franchises, do you look at other business models? I'm curious on your thoughts on them. And I know I kind of asked you at the beginning of the story, you decided to go headfirst in the restaurants, and you're still in the restaurant game.
Yes.
Have you thought about doing stuff in other industries? You know, is there a certain persona who's better for a restaurant industry? I'm curious what you would tell people about the restaurant industry if they're considering getting involved.
Yeah. I think a big chunk of the reason why I'm in the business is because comfort level. I mean, I know the business quite well, and I'm able to just assess opportunities like pretty quickly because I've been doing it for too long. Not to say that it's purely comfort. I love the food business because I love food. And I think at the end of the day, everyone always wakes up hungry and eats 3 to 5 times a day. There's still an opportunity, no matter what happens with tech or evolving changes. Consumer trends and consumer preferences is the main goal. But again, restaurants can be quite capital intensive and time intensive, and they're also famously known for having low margins. So it definitely is not for the faint of heart, which is why early on, you definitely do need to work in the business and understand it left and right and understand what to hire for and what systems to put in place. I'm not opposed to home services. And I mean, your business model is amazing as well. It allows anyone who has the passion and has the work ethic to jump in. The margins are definitely a lot more favorable. I live in a world where a lot of my franchisees are actually home service and restaurants. It can be both. It's a great way to diversify, and it's also a great way to give their workers even more opportunities. Because as you know, systems don't fail. It's all about the people, I guess, is the main point. And if you can take care of your people and give them opportunities, they'll be with you forever, and you can continue scaling that way. I would love to take a look at home service businesses eventually. I think there's a lot of amazing stuff out there, including yours. yeah, it just, again, I think the principles still apply. Like, you just need people who are in coachable. They mm-hmm. are used to following systems and procedures. They are at the same time leaders. They know how to play well with others, and they don't have a massive ego. And I feel like capital is probably the least important thing when it comes to that. I think if you have the right story and people trust you, like, you should be able to raise capital or find a resourceful way in. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well said. Thank you for that. Paul, if people want to get a hold of you, check you out more, where can they find you online?
They should look up Conversations Between You and I on Twitter. but yeah, I'd say my casual, fun, and hopefully insightful self is on Twitter. So just Paul T. Tran. There you'll find my website and anything else you're curious about. But yeah, Twitter will probably be the gateway.
Perfect. And we'll put that in the show notes as well for anyone who wants to follow Paul. Paul, thanks so much for hopping on, dude. That was awesome.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.